from WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. The number of deaths linked to vaping is now over 10, and more than 500 people have been hospitalized with lung damage linked to vaping. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control. They've recently warned against vaping, and Ned Sharpless, the acting commissioner of the FDA, told a House committee hearing this past week that, quote, e-cigarette products are not safe. Here in Massachusetts, Governor Charlie Baker has declared a public health emergency and a four-month ban on the sale of all e-cigarettes. It all begs the question, how did we get here? How could e-cigarettes be on the market if the FDA themselves say they are not safe? Lauren Lempert is a law and policy specialist with the Center for Tobacco Control Research and Education at the University of California, San Francisco. She joins me now. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Last week on this show, we spoke with a physician and researcher, Dr. Farah Karadmand of Baylor College of Medicine. Her research has shown that vape juice alone, just not the nicotine or the THC or the flavors or anything else, can cause lung damage in mice that looks just like the people who are showing up in emergency rooms. And she said, you know, these haven't gone through FDA safety testing, and yet they're on the market. So how can that be? How can these vaping products be on the market without any FDA approval?
That's a good question, and you're right. And in addition to the study that you discussed last week, there have been many other studies in addition that show that e-cigarettes may be linked to cardiovascular disease, to other pulmonary diseases, and maybe even recently a paper came out that the mint and menthol flavors themselves may be linked to a constituent that is carcinogenic. The question about how they can be on the market makes all of us scratch our heads, because FDA has had the authority since August 2016 to regulate e-cigarettes.
August 2016, what happened then that gave FDA the ability to regulate e-cigarettes? Why wouldn't they have always had that ability?
Okay, so without getting too wonky, FDA got authority over all tobacco products in June 2009. However, at that time, in the language of the law, it only limited FDA's authority to cigarettes and smokeless tobacco. And the language was to any other products that FDA deems to be under its authority. So it took from when they had the opportunity to regulate e-cigarettes in 2009, it wasn't until 2014 that they first started the process. They proposed a rule, which we call the deeming rule. And that deeming rule was finally enacted in May 2016, and it became effective in August 2016. So that means that FDA got the authority to regulate e-cigarettes in addition to all the other tobacco products and other newly deemed products in August 2016.
Words like opportunity and authority, though, are different than something like an obligation or a responsibility to. Do they have to regulate e-cigarettes, or is this an optional thing that they can choose to do or not to do?
It's a mandate. I'm glad you clarified that. It's a mandate. They were given the mandate to regulate e-cigarettes in August 2016.
And it's now 2019. FDA has said in the past couple of weeks with this, what's becoming almost a crisis with people showing up in ERs with lung damage linked to vaping, they've said, we're going to come out with something soon. But companies like Juul, one of the major e-cigarette manufacturers, were already in a process, right? There's a deadline, I believe May 2020, where those companies have to come to the FDA and be able to prove that they are a net benefit to public health.
So as the law stood, all these products would have to submit applications by August 2018. And if they did not receive a marketing order a year later, they could be pulled from the market. However, in August 2017, FDA announced that it was going to extend that deadline from August 2018 to August 2022, four more years. And then on top of that, the products could remain on the market until FDA ordered them off. So indefinitely. And that's where we are right now. But then about a month ago, FDA announced, oh, this is a big problem. We're going to roll that back or move it forward to August 2021, which is hardly encouraging. And the reason why the deadline now is May 2020 is only because health groups filed a lawsuit and a federal court ordered the deadline to be May 2020.
Lauren Lumpert, we've been discussing where e-cigarettes fall in a regulatory framework right now, assuming that e-cigarettes are just a recreational tobacco-like product. But they're often framed as being a way for smokers to quit and potentially a safer alternative. If they were actually, though, to be declared officially a way to quit smoking, they would face a completely different set of regulations, right?
That's right. If a company wants to claim that their product is useful for therapeutic purposes, including quitting or cessation, they would have to go through FDA's drug authorities. What we've been talking about so far is FDA's tobacco authorities. No e-cigarette company, to my knowledge, has ever applied for that authorization. And what's disconcerting is that not only the companies are making these claims that the products are safer or could be good for cessation, but FDA itself has made statements that imply, if not outright state, that these products are safer and could be used for cessation. But there is no proof that that's true.
So what kind of evidence do we have here? Because obviously there are plenty of academic researchers who have been looking at this over the past several years, trying to figure out, is there a net benefit to vaping? Who's actually using these products? Are there more teens, you know, getting hooked on nicotine through vaping, or are there more adults who are using it to quit? And what is that balance? So based on that research, what do we know at this point?
Well, one good study that came out in 2018 that looks at this very issue, and they concluded that for every one adult who might successfully quit smoking using e-cigarettes, there would be 80 youth who would start using.
80 to 1.
Right. The ratio is probably worse now because that data was based on pre-Juul explosion of use.
Right. And we've seen in, you know, the past 2 years, 2017 until now, numbers released, I think, just in the past month, showing that use has doubled since 2017 among teens and that it's now something like a quarter of high school seniors who are using e-cigarettes.
Yes, 27.5% of high school seniors are using cigarettes as compared to the most recent
e-cigarettes
as compared to the most recent data for adults from 2018. So it's a year ago, 2.8% of adults are using e-cigarettes. But then what we do know is that the predominant use pattern is dual use, meaning most adults who use e-cigarettes have not quit completely. They are using e-cigarettes along with conventional cigarette smoking. And
wow.
And there's research showing that using both products together may be actually more dangerous than using either one of those products alone.
Lauren Lumpert, looking forward from where we are right now and where e-cigarettes are in a regulatory framework, what's kind of the next step? You know, we've got things in place in Massachusetts, like a four-month ban with officials saying that's to give them time to figure out what the next steps are. FDA has said we'll have something more rigorous soon, right? But realistically, what would we need to know and how long would it take to create some more evidence-based regulation around e-cigarettes?
Gee, I don't know how long it would take because e-cigarettes are relatively new. And of course, the gold standard would be longitudinal studies, and they haven't been able to have longitudinal studies. But there is, as we discussed, many studies that have come out, and FDA funds 9 academic research centers to do research. They're called the TCORs, Tobacco Centers of Regulatory Science, where I work, University of California, San Francisco is one of them, to do this kind of research to help inform FDA's regulations, and that's promising. And listen, there are things that FDA could do right now that would help the problem even before these solid longitudinal studies come in. For example, they have the authority right now to regulate flavors, and they have not done that.
And to be clear, the motivation there with restricting the sale of flavored e-cigarette products is not necessarily because those flavors are toxic, but because those flavors appeal to youth.
Exactly. We know that most youth report that that's what attracted them to e-cigarettes, and that's what keeps them using e-cigarettes.
So possibility that FDA might eliminate the flavors. Any other near-term steps that you see?
Well, one thing that we know is what has made this new generation of e-cigarettes especially attractive is their design. We know Juul, but there are others like that that are very sleek. They're easy to hide. They're sexy for teens. They like them. And FDA has the authority, especially when they're reviewing their pre-market applications, to not authorize for sale a product that's especially attractive to kids. The law provides...
Make them clunky and ugly.
they have the authority to set marketing provisions. Another thing is that this current generation uses this nicotine salts, which make the nicotine level higher and easier to smoke with a higher nicotine level. So that's making them more addictive and easier to use and therefore more attractive to kids. FDA has the authority to regulate that. Now, they had proposed 2017, even as far ago, a proposed rule to reduce the nicotine level, but only in cigarettes. But they could address not only the nicotine level, but the mode of delivery of nicotine that's making it so highly addictive in these new e-cigarette products.
We've been talking about this, and you know, you work in a center that is a tobacco products research and regulation, and there's obvious connections between e-cigarettes and traditional cigarettes. We are decades into knowing that smoking causes lung cancer, that these are dangerous products. And I've heard people in the past week or two say, well, if we're going to talk about banning vaping, why wouldn't we just ban all cigarettes? I want to kind of flip that idea a little bit and say, okay, we haven't banned cigarettes. We've just put warning labels on them that say, we know this is dangerous and bad for you. Use at your own risk, essentially. Can you imagine doing that for e-cigarettes? Just, you know, if we were to figure out exactly what the dangers are, just put a warning label on e-cigarettes. And based on our experience with smoking and those kinds of warning labels, would you expect that to actually reduce the use of e-cigarettes?
So two questions. One, FDA does have the authority to require warning labels on e-cigarettes. As I recall, the warning label is something like, warning, this contains nicotine. Nicotine is addictive. And we have research showing that that kind of warning label is not effective, especially for kids. Kids do not understand what it means to be addicted. But most people don't believe that they will stay addicted. They think they'll try e-cigarettes or regular cigarettes, and then they'll be able to quit later when they want to. And that's just not the case. So we know that particular kind of warning label is not effective. FDA would have to come up with better warning labels to make them effective.
That's Lauren Lumpert. She's a law and policy specialist with the Center for Tobacco Control Research and Education at the University of California, San Francisco. Lauren, thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.